one into the night, deep into right, way out of here.
Swung on,
did it,
crushed, and the Phillies are going to lead it.
Harper, the swing of his life.
The 0-2 pitch, swing and a miss, struck him out.
From WHYY, it is hitting season. Hey there, podcast pals. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight. You can follow me on X and Blue Sky at John Stolness. Coming up, we're going to recap the Phillies series against the Rangers this weekend. We talked about, Justin and Liz talked about opening day on the previous podcast, so no need to trot over that ground once again. But we'll talk about the games on Saturday and Sunday, both losses as the Phillies offense, the bats went quiet, and some uneven starting pitching from Arenola and Jesus Luzardo. We'll talk about some of the other folks. The defense was not great in some spots, but okay in other spots. You know, just kind of a not a lot of fun was had this weekend at Citizens Bank Park against Texas, but we'll talk about it and, you know, gauge our worry level if anybody can be and should be worried about anything three games into a 162-game season. But joining me to talk about it here on the roundtable, Justin Clue and Liz Rocher. Liz, of course, is the editor of Sabres Baseball Research Journal. You can follow her on Blue Sky and X at Liz Rocher. Liz, how are you?
Did any of you guys watch Sunday Night Baseball last night on Peacock?
I did not.
Indeed, yes.
We usually stay away from Sunday Night Baseball, but it was on ESPN. It was obnoxious and annoying. We watched it on Peacock last night, and it was actually a thoroughly enjoyable experience. Jason Benetti was in the box, Ryan Roland Smith, the Australian reliever, and one other guy I don't remember, but they were having fun. They were enjoying themselves. They did some fun stats, like something with like relievers with like stats for relievers with hyphens in their names. You know, like they kind of realized immediately that a baseball game, a baseball broadcast doesn't have to be deadly serious.
Yeah,
it's baseball. It's not life and death. We can have some fun. We can eat weird things, you know, at T-Mobile Park. Is that what it's called now in Seattle? They had like a ferry boat, one of their famous ferry boats, full of nachos with crab on top. And you could see them all over the ballpark. Like there was a sea of small ferry boats filled with crab covered nachos. It was a really fun broadcast. I encourage everyone to check it out.
That's good. You know, it's nice to hear that for a change. Usually we can be pretty critical here with this kind of stuff. So it's nice to throw some roses at folks when they do a good job. That's great. Very, very cool. Justin Clue also joining us from Baseball Prospectus, of course, author of the new book, Summer of the Cheap Wieners, which you can get at brooklinebooks.com. You can follow him on Blue Sky at Justin Clue. Justin, how are you doing, bud?
6-for-22 with runners in scoring position. Welcome back, boys.
So glad you started with me.
Let me tell you what. You said not a lot of fun. I was in that parking lot this weekend. I think you're against the Rangers, not a lot of fun, but opening day weekend still managed to be a lot of fun. Unfortunately, I think if you take away the opening day element of this series, kind of just looks like a sloppy Phillies series. But regardless, that was the context. It was opening day. So there was fun had despite what happened on the field. And I do want to issue a formal apology to my friend Jeff, whose tailgate I have crashed many, many years now. And this year I did not. And this was the one and only year so far at which he has had a book he has asked me to autograph. A book that I wrote that maybe you've heard of called Summer of the Cheap Wieners. And I said I would stop by and sign it. I did not. It was classless. It was classless. I got to tell you, I hope it doesn't. He said, despite that, having the book on the table waiting for me to sign, he probably got a few more people to buy it. So not only did I let him down, he lifted me up. So it's got a real kid left in the rain whose parents aren't picking him up after soccer practice vibe for me now. And the guilt is really weighing for me. So I really wanted to address that straight up here. Jeff, I'm so sorry. It won't happen again.
Does Jeff listen to the podcast?
I hope so, because this is where I'm apologizing.
That was my question. I'm just like, you know, I can apologize to whoever I want here. But the question is, do they know?
This guy Jeff sounds like the kind of guy who would recruit 10 other people to listen to the podcast, too. So good on you, Jeff. Good on you, Jeff.
We like you, Jeff, even though Justin hates you.
All around wonderful person, and we talls need to stick together because, I mean, even in this conversation, you can hear how devious short people are and malicious, but the talls need to stick together, And that's on me. I let you down.
Before I get into the Philly stuff, I got to ask a question about this tall thing, because I had somebody that I used to work with who will remain nameless, who got upset with me one time because he claimed that he was often the victim of tall person jokes, and that there was like a tall people are the butt of jokes a lot of times because of their height. Now, this guy wasn't a monster. He was like, 6'4". It wasn't like, he was towering over everyone with like Andre the Giant hands or anything like that. But, is there, Justin, as a tall person, and you're what, like 6'3", 6'2", 6'3", something like that?
Or
you?
No, my wife says I'm 6'5". My driver's license says 6'4".
Okay. So yes, you are a resident tall person. Have you found during the course of your life that you are the victim of such harmful barbs?
I will say that any attempt to insult you for being tall can be easily refuted by putting someone on top of a refrigerator, or yes, taking several very long strides away, or dating successfully. The point is that no. Right. I would say that in general, no, being tall is not something that harms you. I will say that there should be a law that after a certain height, you just automatically get the exit row seats on a plane. That's my one tall person complaint, but I understand that my life has been much easier because of the height that it has included.
I'm sorry. Is someone actually complaining about tall jokes?
Yes.
I'm sorry. Get a thicker skin, man. I am 5'1" tall. I have been that height for as long as I can remember, really. And all of my friends, including Justin Clue on this podcast, teases me about my height. And you know what? It's totally fine because I am short and I can't change it. What am I going to do? Just jump up and, try and get something on a high shelf? No, I'm going to ask my husband, who is also 6'4".
To be fair, I mostly just hear like the sound of like shrill gerbils talking to each other when short people talk. So often I'm responding and I don't even realize I'm insulting them.
Fair enough.
This is what's happening right now with Justin.
As someone who was 5 foot
hey, bro, I'll put you on top of a refrigerator.
That's right. As someone who was 5 foot
to do it before.
As someone who was 5'2" going into his senior year of high school, I experienced the short man travails for a long, long time.
And so much worse than short women or tall men.
Yes. Yes, it certainly is. And then I grew finally, and I'm now 5'10". So this podcast is kind of like the bars on your cell phone. If you line Justin, me, and Liz up, you kind of get the whole 45-degree angle action going on there if you line the three of us up. So if you have come out to our tailgates at all and seen us standing together, you get the idea there.
I was going to say,
take
there's
photos
a picture
of
from
us
a tailgate
and make fun of us
in which we are standing in that row. That image exists.
Yes, absolutely it is. Yes, it is. All right. Enough about the height of the podcast. Let's talk about the Phils and the series against the Rangers over the weekend. They were largely
awful. Can you tell
awful.
We don't want to talk about
it? I know.
We've
been trying to kick the can down the road, but, we're a good 9 minutes into the podcast now, so we'll probably get around to it. The Phils were largely awful in all aspects of the game on Saturday and Sunday. They lost 8-3 on Sunday. Three hits all game long. On Sunday, they were no hit for the first 5 1/3 innings. They also lost 5-4 in 10 innings on Saturday, but they were with a missed foul pop out in the ninth inning from getting shut out in that game 3-0. And it's only because Jake Berger dropped a foul pop up that the Phillies were given some extra life in the ninth inning and managed to come back to score three runs. But that was exciting. That ninth inning comeback, they took advantage of the door being opened. And then Joan Duran couldn't keep Texas off the scoreboard with the zombie runner on second to start the 10th, and did not pitch well in that 10th inning at all. So the Phillies were no hit for 4 2/3 innings on Saturday against last minute starter Jacob Latz, who was filling in for Jacob DeGrom, who was scratched right before the game. And then they were no hit for 5 1/3 innings against Mackenzie Gore, who has had this team's number over the years. The Phillies hit 183 in the opening three-game series, their lowest batting average to begin a season since 2015. And in just a second, I have in front of me, for The Good Fight, actually, I'm writing a piece about what those three games in 2015 looked like. We'll talk about them in just a second. But, overall, not a good showing by the offense. On the other hand, too, starting pitching wasn't all that good. Aaron Nola lasted five innings, gave up
three runs in five innings. So not a terrible outing from him, but did give up two home runs. The velocity down on his fastball a little bit in his first outing on a very cold day at Citizens Bank Park. And then Jesus Luzardo got blitzed for six runs and six innings in the game on Sunday. The stuff was there. The location was not. So key questions from this weekend, guys. Tell me first something that you liked from the games on Saturday and Sunday. What was a takeaway, Justin? A good takeaway, something good that happened on Saturday and Sunday before we continue diving in on the mess.
Well, you know, baseball has begun when you hear your first screamed Alec Boehm F word of the season. So it's good to hear that passion again.
Alec Hamels. Boehm screaming the F word, not someone screaming the F word at Alec Boehm.
Yeah, I mean what I mean, John. Cole Hamels and John Kruk in the booth. I will tell you what. Okay. Cole Hamels is not the most excited person, but I don't mean that as in a derogatory sense. Honestly, the Hamels and Kruk combo in the TV booth is like a dog lounging on a couch talking to a cat preening in a sunbeam, and then there's just a baseball game on the television that's in the room they're in, and they're just kind of like making little comments back and forth to each other. It's very calm and very very fun, especially in a game where like the vibes are pretty sour by the end of game three. It was pretty clear they were going to lose that game, and you know, they had some time to fill, and they had an exchange that was about Shane Victorino playing for the Savannah Bananas and how outs can be made on foul balls that are hit into the stands if a fan catches them. And Cole Hamels was like, can you imagine doing that here? And Kruk was like, they should offer a beer to anyone who catches a foul ball and like gets an out for the Phillies. And then there was silence. And he was like, my God, they'd kill each other. And it was a very enjoyable moment. But as far as other good things related directly to the play on the field, hey, Christopher Sanchez looked amazing on opening day. Kyle Schwarber has homered, by my count, three out of the four opening days he's been here in Philadelphia. So the man understands the moment and obviously can hit home runs. I feel like Adolis Garcia and JT Realmuto had some hard hit balls that went into gloves over the weekend. So like while there were frustrating results, there were also promising, you know, actual contact made. Looking like there's could be a bunch of troublemakers out there with Justin Crawford, Brandon Marsh, and Bryson Stott. Those are pretty much your offensive leaders from this weekend. Each of them had three hits and a walk, which is enough to make you an offensive leader on this team after hitting 183 for an entire series. Brandon Marsh had a pair of doubles. Every time Trey Turner got on base, he scored, I believe. It wasn't a lot that he got on base, but every time he did, he came around to score, which is a great sign about having him in the leadoff spot and Schwarber hitting number two, which again, really paid off on opening day when Schwarber hit a home run and somebody was on base. Hey, look at that. And you could probably chalk up Jesus Luzardo's stuff to a couple of bad pitches rather than like a really bad start. And he afterwards didn't seem to be spiraling or particularly bummed out. He threw 99 pitches and struck out seven. So, you know, that was generally a positive. And I'm still looking forward to Andrew Painter making his debut this week. So, oh, and one last thing. After Andrew McCutchen hit his home run.
That was funny.
And when he apologized to the Phillies fans behind the dugout, that was nice. You know, you're never sad to see Andrew McCutchen do anything, even when it's hurting.
The Andrew McCutchen thing there, the guy he apologized to, was a joking apology. Like, I'm sorry, I don't want to. It's a friend of his who was connected to the Phillies. He had a personal connection with the person behind the home plate who was giving him a good hard time about the three-run home run off of Jesus Luzardo. But yeah, McCutchen with a big weekend. He had the game-winning hit in the 10th inning on Saturday as well. So coming back
to
Philadelphia.
He looked good.
Yeah.
He looked good to the point where I'm just like, man, maybe Pittsburgh is just bad for him.
Yeah,
I mean, he did very well for a guy who the people sitting next to me on opening day were like, well, that can't be Andrew McCutchen, right? That's got to be some other McCutchen.
It's got to be his son or something by this point.
Nope.
17 years in the major leagues for Andrew McCutchen at this point, in case you want to feel old, everybody.
I think he wants to hit 20. He's still playing now. I think he wants to hit 20 years, which is a huge accomplishment, and I support him in that. He's such a great player. He's a good team guy. We're not talking about Andrew McCutchen on this podcast, but it turns out for a minute we are.
Well, he could be among the things, Liz, that you liked or felt good about from Saturday and Sunday, even though he played for an opponent. But was there anything else Justin didn't mention or something to echo that you liked or enjoyed from Saturday and Sunday?
I'll echo my enjoyment, the enjoyment of Justin Crawford. Seeing him up there, ready to go, just doing stuff and looking comfortable. That was such a relief to see him get off to a fast start. can only mean good things for his future. He's not worried about getting off the schneid or trying to find his first hit or, you know, being worried about base running. He's already done almost everything that we needed him to do. He had a great catch in center field over by Monty's alley. He had, he saw the first pitch he saw on Friday. He sent for a, I'm sorry, on Thursday, he sent out for a hit. I'm just going to continue to think about that great catch for a long time, considering he actually jumped. If you look at it, he jumped a little bit early.
Yeah, he did.
And as he was coming down, the ball fell into his glove. I'm like, that is the type of luck you only get when you're good at your job.
Or tall.
Or tall.
True.
Fair point.
Or tall.
Fair point. Tiny.
You
tiny
heard it right here first.
Could make that catch. Yeah. Ricky Otero is not making that catch, friends. Not no. happening.
Ben Revere's probably not making that catch.
No, Ben Revere is not scaling that wall. I'm going to talk about Ben Revere in just a second. Ben Revere's name will come up again on the podcast here in just a second, by the way. Something I liked from the games on Saturday and Sunday specifically, I did like when they were given a second chance in the ninth inning that the Phillies managed to get a couple of key clutch hits to tie the game. Certainly the Brandon Marsh single, he has probably looked the best out of everybody in the lineup right now with two. You mentioned the two doubles on opening day, but another big two run single in the ninth inning on Saturday when it seemed like maybe the Rangers were going to gift the Phillies a win in that game. So I liked how they came back. I liked how they were able to pick themselves up off the mat after doing absolutely nothing the entire day. That was probably the high point of the games on Saturday and Sunday. Unfortunately, you had to play some extra innings after that, and the 10th inning did not go well for the Phillies on Saturday. So let's transition, and I think we'll have more of a bounty of items to choose from here as we discuss what maybe was the thing that annoyed or frustrated you or worried you most from Saturday or Sunday. Liz, let me start with you on this one. What was the thing that annoyed, frustrated, worried you from Saturday and Sunday?
Well, I'll take the easy one here and go Bryce Harper. I mean, you asked me first, so I'll do
That's
that.
I'm teeing you up.
It was really unpleasant to watch him. I think he had one good hit, and it might have been in extra innings, or it might have been in the ninth on Saturday. But that's like
it was in the tenth on Saturday, and he had the RBI single. Yep.
Yeah, and so like I sat here before the podcast because I watched all three games this weekend from start to finish, including Sundays for some reason. And I sat and I thought, can I remember what Bryce Harper did without looking it up? And that one thing is the only thing that came to mind. And my guess is that's maybe the only thing he did this weekend. I didn't look because I like going on feelings, but it was unpleasant to watch him, especially after he'd run his mouth so much. You would think he'd come out of the gate understanding that chomping at the bit is just such a bad way for him to be. When he's excited, when he's nervous, when he's anxious about getting a hit, he doesn't do it. And that's all we've seen for like the past 2 years of him. Like we're entering year three of, well, when's he going to come out? When's he going to come back and be the guy that we want him to be? And we're all hoping that this is the year because it's getting real late, real early. So, yeah, that was frustrating. And I would love to see him improve, do better, anything, fix anything.
Yeah, I mean, with Bryce Harper specifically, I'm going to ask Justin your thoughts in just a second, too. With Bryce Harper specifically, that at bat in the game on Sunday when the Phillies were down 6-0 in the sixth, but they load the bases with nobody out. Real opportunity to put a dent in that deficit right there. And Mackenzie Gore just knew how to pitch Bryce Harper in that particular spot. Threw a slider on the inner part of the plate that Harper weakly hit down the first baseline for a foul ball. And then he took a strike right at the top of the zone, but middle of the zone. For strike two, 96-mile-an-hour fastball. And how many times have we seen this from him over the course of the last couple of years, falling in an 0-2 or a 1-2 hole? He's swinging first pitch. And that part, that was really where the at-bat was lost. Swinging first pitch. Now, that pitch is probably a strike that Mackenzie Gore threw on the inner part of the plate. But if you're Bryce Harper, what are you doing with that pitch? You're not doing any damage with that pitch. And just the mindset of the at-bat as well is, I'm gonna pounce. I'm gonna strike. I'm gonna ambush here. And you know, so often pitchers are not throwing him. They're not throwing him first pitch fastballs down the middle. Like, just learn that, man. That's not how they're pitching you. And then Mackenzie Gore throws a fastball high and away as a kind of a waste pitch to make it 1-2. And then Harper foul tips for a strikeout on a slider down and away. I mean, it was just. Justin, it seems like to me he's just been so much easier to pitch to over these last couple of years, and it was when you talk as much as you do, not you but Bryce Harper, and you don't perform, you know, you're kind of leaving yourself open for the boos that eventually cascaded down from the fans in at Citizens Bank Park. It was a frustrating moment.
Totally warranted, by the way. I don't think there needs to be any discourse about booing on opening day. Yeah. Everybody's more excited. You know, this is the most excited people are going to be potentially until, like, I don't know, maybe like the All-Star break or the stretch. Like, you know, this is, the excitement level is higher because baseball is back. And then when you have a lousy series like this and mistakes are made and there's misplays and bad at-bats, then people are going to boo and be frustrated because you're making them feel stupid for feeling excited, you know? And that's really a shame, because in the context of that 5-4 almost comeback the Phillies almost pulled off on Saturday, the Cardinals, Blue Jays, Reds, Mets, and Braves all had walk-off wins as home teams involving like comebacks of some kind. So it was like all over baseball, this kind of win was happening. So it was like, hey, Phillies, aren't you one of those kinds of teams that can do that too? But they fell short, and they were one of two teams that did fall short in coming back on that day. And the other one was the Mariners. So my World Series picks were both the teams that, you know, didn't come through in extra innings. It's totally fine. Anyway, Harper. Yeah. So going back to Hamels in the booth, he's a good company man. He's going to read your script. And Harper came up in that situation, and Hamels said, you know, this is who you want up in this situation. Okay, I'll say it. Right now, Bryce Harper is not who I want up in that situation.
No, not even a little bit.
I want somebody who's going to have a patient at bat without the sound of TV static blasting on the inside of their head. Later this season, I look forward to wanting Bryce Harper up in that situation. But until further notice, Bryce is who I'm going to heavily sigh when I see coming up in that situation, because you generally know how it's going to go. And he knows how it's going to go. And it's really just extra frustrating because he's out there saying, I'm going to be more patient, I need to draw more walks. And then he goes up there, swings at 3 out of 4 pitches, and, you know, on to the next guy. Great. Thanks. So, yeah, that was obviously a big frustrating part of this series. And adequately hitting Bryce Harper probably wins you at least one of those three games, or one of those two games that you lost. So that's a big difference and a huge bummer. But, I mean, let's keep going down the list. Adolis Garcia losing that ball in the sun, you know, it's a mistake, it's stupid, but I hate that it was him, because now he's in this little hole. He's the new guy, you know, you want to see him come out and do something cool and heroic. Then he gets the chance with the bases, with runners on base, to really do some damage, and he did his job. He hit that liner into left field. Like, he did it. He made hard contact. It just went into somebody's glove, and that's all anybody's going to remember, and they're going to be like, well, he didn't come through. So now Garcia's just kind of like, you have that one chance when you're the new guy, and unfortunately it didn't go his way. And I don't think that's going to be, like, you know, defining the rest of his season, but it does define who he is here at first. And now he's got a little hole to crawl out of. Otto Kemp, not looking like what I call a natural out there in left field.
No, that was a bad weekend for him there. Yeah.
My God.
Gotta mention that. Kyle Schwarber's unfortunate use of the hitter's challenge just to use it right before he actually did need to use it.
There were several bad challenges. Batters and pitchers should not be allowed. I'm sorry. I think that, no.
Just keep hitters, letting JT Realmuto challenge for batters, too. Like, he's in the dugout, but he's still the only one who can call it for him.
Yeah.
Not a great opening series for Joan Duran, the guy who's not supposed to be a question mark. And now there's a couple of leaks springing there. That was not pleasant to see. I don't like hearing Rob Thompson call the Phillies anxious. That's not a word I want to hear describing them to start the season either. And also, Brandon Nimmo. Boy, there's not a worse guy you want to give up a home run to. That is just not the guy you want to see with his big, stupid, toothy grin on his face, his dumb, try-hard run into first. Yeah, like, just not a guy you want to succeed in your ballpark as an opponent. So, yeah, like you said, lots to choose from. Nothing's unfixable early and all that, but a lot of stuff you didn't want to see out there.
Yeah, and I'll throw in a couple others. Some of the low leverage relievers. Kyle Backus did not have a good weekend. Zach Pop did not have a good weekend. I did like what we saw from Boylan, Alvarado, Tanner Banks. They all looked really good. But I'm going to say, just to kind of go off the beaten path here a little bit and talk a little bit more about Joan Duran. I think that, you know, towards the end of last year, he was not as unhittable. He gave up hits in, I think, four of his final six appearances. He, of course, walked in the tying run in the playoffs against the Dodgers in that game four. And we kind of forget about that one. But, you know, you can't do that. You can't do that. And he had that aura of invincibility, that of unhittability when he first came to the Phillies. And he was largely that for the first month and a half that he was here. But since then, I guess I have to accept the fact he's a human being and not a relief pitching cyborg, but it is not the confidence level in Duran is not overwhelmingly high. I mean, on opening day, he did manage to wriggle out of a jam that was not of his own making. You know, gave up an inherited runner, but managed to protect the 2-run lead. But for the as good as his stuff is, for the electricity that he has on his fastball, and he has that splinker, and he's supposed to be having this this split changeup as well. Guys make a lot of hard contact on him, and maybe that part of that is because of the speed with which he throws, but he gives up a lot of hard hit balls. When balls are put in play, they're not weak. It's not weak contact. At least it hasn't been over his last, going back to last year, I would say, you know, half dozen to 10 appearances in the majors. So just something to keep an eye on. I still believe he's going to be an all-star closer for this team. It might have just been, you know, kind of cold out. Some of these guys have a little bit of trouble. Aaron Nola, we know, historically struggles in April because it's a little bit colder. It's not an excuse. It's just the reality of the situation. And maybe that's what's going on with Duran a little bit here in the first couple of outings, but the 10th inning on Saturday was not good. You can't wild pitch the first run in. And he threw that ball 50 feet. I mean, it bounced like 10 feet in front of home plate. It was a real spike ball into the ground there. And there was no chance. JT had no chance on that play. So
I got two side notes on Duran as well. Real quick, his intro, playing it in the daytime, not super effective. I mean, maybe I'm wrong on this, but where the out of town scoreboard was a part of the intro with the fire. It was not
anymore.
When I was sitting there on opening day, which means God knows we can't have 1 second without an ad revenue just blasting us in the face. But yeah,
I have a theory about that.
Fire away.
I think it's because NBC Sports Philly has now decided, with either the Phillies urging or not, to show Duran's entrance pretty much every time. Like, I was shocked they did it in the daylight. I'm just like, why are you showing me this? This is stupid. I don't want to see this stuff in the daylight. And since they're sacrificing a commercial break to show us that, my thought is that Citizens Bank Park agreed to include more advertising. So when they show it, they get a little bit more. And they also have a little sponsored thing in the corner of the TV, you know, this sponsored by. But that's my guess. I mean, this is a season that we're seeing more than anything. The Phillies story going into it, as Justin has said a number of times, is messy. And this stuff with Harry the K's and Middleton's comment and this stuff with, you know,
like
his
parents stuff, that took a turn over the weekend too. Like, and it ratcheted up what's going on with that. I mean, goodness gracious.
Like they're messy. And this whole revenue thing is part of it as well, because the Phillies have advertised themselves as like a hometown team that loves its city and blah, blah, blah. But they are just like everybody else. We can't forget that when it comes to teams, when we're thinking of them as an entity. They are separate from us. They are not here for us. They're trying to take baseball away from us so they could charge us more for it. So sorry to go on a long tangent there, but I was super annoyed by that this weekend. I really was.
Nice theory, Liz, but I'll wait till a condescending John Middleton sloshes his drink at me before I believe anything about the Phillies' revenue situation. Thanks a lot.
Completely understand.
Just a quick side note as well on Duran, the other Duran who was playing for the Rangers. This was just a great indication of the kind of weekend it was for the Phillies. He hits that ball off his foot. The ump misses it. The Phillies are like, hey, that's not a fair ball. They obviously, you know, they send him back to home plate, and then he hits an RBI double and puts them in an even further hole. That's just, yeah. The second thing happening was predictable because of the first one. It was just like, yep, that's the kind of opening weekend we have this year.
Yeah, and here's the thing. We're half an hour into the podcast now, and we I think this goes without saying, because we didn't say it, and everybody understands that, we are three games into the season. So when you hear us talking about all of these things, please understand we are doing so with the full knowledge that we are three games into a 162-game season, okay? So we get that. But the thing is with the Phillies offense in particular is that, and I don't know what people were expecting, this is what they are. This is who they are. This is what they do. They have cold stretches. They have hot stretches. Sometimes it goes from like one game where you bash the heck out of the ball, and then the next game, you get no hit for the first six innings each of the next two games. I mean, you show some fight at the end of a game. But I mean, this is this team. There is nothing that happened on Saturday and Sunday that should have surprised anybody. It's unfortunate that it's happening here in the first three games, really the second and third game of the season, because opening day, as you guys talked about, was a complete win. You know, I mean, it truly was. Everything, it gave you so many things to feel great about. And then the offense disappeared on Saturday and Sunday. Again, not a surprise. It's what happens. You're going to see with this team moving forward, you're going to have stretches where Trey Turner, Kyle Schwarber, and Bryce Harper go a combined 5-for-37 in a three-game series. Like, it's going to happen. It's brutal to watch. You're, like Justin said, the runners in scoring position numbers at the top of the podcast. You're going to have stretches where this team hits 200 with runners in scoring position. That might be a full month of it, and it drives you absolutely crazy. And for everyone who forgets last year, the Phillies, one of the main storylines throughout the whole first half of the season was, where is the power? When are the Phillies going to slug? When are the Phillies going to get the extra base hits? When are they going to start hitting the homers? And then the weather got warmer and they started to get the extra base hits and they started to hit home runs. So I'm not sitting here telling you you shouldn't be frustrated. You shouldn't be annoyed. It shouldn't be infuriating to watch an offense struggle the way they did on Saturday and Sunday. But it also is, there's nothing new under the sun with what we saw here on Saturday and Sunday against the Rangers, specifically from the Phillies offense, which is why I'm not freaking out about it. And I don't think either of you guys are freaking out about it either.
Nah.
Look, we've been down this road before. There's a series of opening day episodes of this podcast where you can hear us qualify all of our opinions by saying it's early. Folks, I'd love to do this year, but we don't have to keep saying it's early. Like, right. We all know it's
That's
early.
That's what I'm saying. From here on out, everyone just know that. We're not saying it anymore. Just know that.
That's if I'm saying something that I think is a longer term issue for the Phillies, I will be sure to make that very clear. But until that happens, I just understand that everything is just a response to what happened on the field. You can be very positive about this team moving forward and still look at this series, this opening series, and go like, it was bad. Like, they did not look great in a lot of ways. So that's also objectively true.
I've got a story for the good fight coming out here on Monday afternoon, because this was, I mentioned at the top of the podcast, that this was the worst offensive showing through the first in the team's opening series for the Phillies, going back to 2015, which I'll remind everyone was the worst team we've seen in the 21st century with this franchise. They had a 99 loss season. It was like the year Ryan Sandberg quit in the middle of the season, the white flag game in Baltimore. I mean, this is when we hit bottom. Okay. That was the bottom of the barrel. And, I was looking up like, what did those lineups look like in 2015? How bad was it? In the opener, they lost 8-0. They opened the season against the Red Sox in Philadelphia. They lost 8-0 at Citizens Bank Park. Cole Hamels gave up 4 runs in 5 innings of work, gave up 4 solo home runs in that game.
Home runs.
Oh, yeah, man. I feel like Hamels always had a tough time in Chicago. I don't know why that comes to mind because he had a no-hitter there. But he always has a tough time with the Red Sox. I remember fearing the Red Sox series whenever it came up, the rare times that it did when Hamels was still a starter. It was always terrible.
Meanwhile, they were also all talking about, where's he going to be traded to this season? Right, like, right. That was the Cole Hamels narrative. So
Right. And in that series, in that opening day game, the Phillies were shut out on 3 hits. They struck out 9 times and walked twice. Here's the opening day lineup in 2015. Ben Revere starting in left field. Odubel Herrera got the start in center. Chase Utley was your second baseman batting third. Ryan Howard was batting cleanup. But Ryan Howard, by the way, finished with -2.1 wins above replacement in 2015.
Is that
Carlos Ruiz was your cleanup hitter. Grady Sizemore got the opening day start in right. Cody Ashe was your third baseman. Freddie Galvis was your shortstop that day, which is why you got 0 runs on 3 hits.
Real quick note on Freddie Galvis. Heard a great story during a spring training broadcast. He was around and his son's playing in baseball. You know, he's entered that phase. And, you know, I'm paraphrasing, but the exchange was something like they asked him, hey, you know, how's he looking? Like, what's your son's like? What's the scouting report? And he's like, oh, he's a great fielder. He's like, he's just like me. Like, they're like, oh, that's great. He's such a great fielder. And he's like, yeah, really hope he's a better hitter though. You're like, oh, Freddie, hey man, you're a 20 home run hitter one season. You're like, that's don't right. Sell yourself short, bud. But yeah, that was a great lineup. I think I'm the only person on this show and probably listening to the show who owned a Ben Revere jersey. I'm sure I've mentioned that before. Really went hard on Ben Revere. Really went hard on Grady Sizemore being a bounce back candidate as well.
Oh, yeah.
These are just signs of, you know, the return of baseball.
Dementia?
Really stirs up a lot of, you know, stuff that looks silly in retrospect. And I'm not alone because there were people in the audience on 2015 opening day who were holding signs that said 2015 will surprise you, which you think could be a positive message. But then you see images of these people and they're all kind of just kind of like clenching their jaws and like there's not a lot of smiles. And you're like, oh, right. Surprises can be bad, too. And that is, in fact, what happened during the 2015 season. I will say opening weekend. It wasn't the Phillies lineup I was most interested in. It was the Red Sox lineup. Shane Victorino came back with the Red Sox for the first time and did his like hat tip standing O moment. And that was probably one of the most emotional moments of that season in 2015 to have him come back. Because you're in that sort of melancholy phase of like, yeah, we're watching our heroes come back with other teams. And like, it's just a bunch of question marks. And last thing I'll say, I was reminded in looking back at 2015 opening day that they refer to Ruben Amaro as Ruin Tomorrow Jr. in some of the write-ups. And I know we've all heard that before.
Yeah.
I just got to say, having not thought about it in a while, you know, you have whatever opinion you want on Ruben Amaro and the work he did and what he did and everything. And then there was good and there was bad. And, you know, it's Ruben Amaro. But end of the day, that's a really solid nickname. I mean,
it's a great nickname. The fact
that that lines up the way it does is like cosmic in its faithfulness. Like that is just excellent.
The fact that we have not had a documentary produced of the person who came up with it, or that we don't know, I don't think we know who came up with Ruin Tomorrow Jr. If somebody knows, I would love to know who came up with that and to celebrate them.
I feel like it's sort of like the invention of pasta, where it ended up being so evident to like a couple of cultures that they did it independently of each other, like China and Italy, both originated pasta in a way. That is the same here. I feel like maybe a couple of people realized it was a good thing. It was perfect and put it up on Twitter, which was not a hellhole at the time. And it became a thing. It was a little bit, that was pretty much around the time that we did that. I'm trying to remember the name of it. It was the sliding scale of disgust from Ruben Amaro.
Yeah. The level
that
of smug
was
meter,
brilliant.
Wasn't it the smug meter?
Smug meter,
Smug meter.
Yeah.
Thank you.
For the good fight. The good fight had a Ruben Amaro smug meter based
the Department of Homeland Security terrorism alert meter.
That's right.
That was right because it was around the time.
Yes, it was based off of the color alert system that the Department of Homeland Security had in the mid 2010s. That is 100% correct. Yes, I was brilliant. That was just one of the most brilliant parts of the good fight back in those days, for sure.
We were all very okay
back then, for sure. Yeah. By the way, just a couple other names from 2015 in the lineup for the second game. Darren Ruff got the start in left field. Also played a little first base that day. And Jeff Francoeur was your right fielder that day. So, yeah, it was. And then I did enjoy David Buchanan as the team's number three starter, getting the start in the third game of the season that year. But anyway,
Jeff Francoeur, by the way, ended that season by taking his jersey off and throwing it into the stands. And in this just kind of final moment of like, you know, nobody has to do this anymore. Like, this is burning my skin and has been for 6 months. Get it off me. And you're like, yeah, now the season can end.
At that game and had seats right by where he threw that. He threw the jersey. I would have caught it if my dad and I hadn't got up to sort of do a round while Ichiro was pitching. Because they were facing the Marlins, I think, and Ichiro was pitching to end the season. It was wild.
What an artifact to own if you were to get that. Like, wow.
I wanted it. Because I had
behind that. Yep.
I'd done a total 180 on Jeff Francoeur after hating him and his stupid face for years.
Yeah. Oh, he was my Brandon Nimmo for a while. I don't see a similar redemption for Nimmo in the future, however.
Nope. Not at all.
And I really thought we were done with that guy. And we are going to be done with him for the rest of the season. But man, I didn't need that first thing in the morning. You know what I mean? Nah. Like some things you need to push off until later in the day. Brandon Nimmo is not something you want to wake up to. And that's unfortunately.
Could have waited till at least May, maybe June. Yeah.
Before we do the Brandon
Nimmo. In the late morning afternoon phase of the baseball season.
Exactly. I did ask our Twitter followers to give us three words about the Phillies weekend against the Rangers. And I'm just going to run some of them down here. And if you guys, there's any you particularly like, just, stop me. NQA Tom, postseason form is what he made
postseason great three words
there. So I'm going to go with it, but it's not exactly three words.
It
there.
Is.
Postseason's one word.
It depends on it. Cause every organization, every institution has their house way of doing it. At Sabre, we do postseason one word, but I know some people do postseason hyphenated, which I think is stupid, but they still do it.
We're not Canadian. I mean, it's one
no,
word.
We're not.
Out loud. Jeez Louise, what's going on here? All right. At Utley's underscore thumb, it said 5 for 37, which is again, I think the top three in the order. We had a number of folks, including Jennifer Lynn, who is the morning show host for WHYY, said, he texted, her husband says, same old blank. And that was echoed by, I think there were like 15 people who gave me the same three words there with regard to the Phillies. So we're getting after it early here in the season, folks. Our friend at Fransky LA, Ghost Energy Drek, was his.
That's why he's part of our Patreon, folks.
Yep. Another one, definitely not elite, at Phil's Fanatic, and a number of others tweeted that one out. Smarty Jones. Our good fight colleague, 3 of 162. So more of the optimistic, like, hey, everybody relax. Everybody chill out. It's not that big a deal. At Nikki underscore Dufresne, fire Kevin Long. I mean, that's not what you think, but that's where we are.
Whoa.
That's a long.
Yeah, that's right. At It's the Real Scott, flaccid, limp, dry. Those are adjectives.
Okay, sure we're talking about the Phillies, right?
Right, that's right.
Okay.
At Brochet, and this was a popular one as well, run it back. at JMona3 tweeted, Adolis Castellanos stinks. You had at Your Highness 526, work the count, which I agree with on that one. That's something that at Fat Mart, poor plate approach. So a lot of good ones here. At Dave Jarecki, Mattingly by July. Of course, a little dig at Rob Thompson there, who didn't do anything wrong this weekend. I mean, I don't know why we're getting after Rob Thompson, but okay. That's too many strikeouts at C4J21. I am proud of everyone for sticking with the rules here. We didn't have a lot of 5 and 6. Except the first guy, yeah, who's from Canada. Must be from Canada. Well, that sucked, as I see that on here. It's only March at DR3 Wheels sent that one out. So relax, okay, people. And then you have They Freaking Suck, and I'm helping to clean that up for our audience here. So that's the general tenor of the three words, guys. And we got a lot of responses, like 300 responses to that. So we're not going to do that at the end of every series, but... we're going to do that for some.
Would we like to go around the table and say our three words to describe?
Oh, gosh, I didn't mention that before the show. I didn't want to put anybody on the spot. But Justin, it sounds like you have something teed up. So let's hear
it. It's just because I just said it, and it has two meanings. That took long, as in sarcastically, for us to be frustrated, for them to not hit. But also any success you saw took Kevin Long and his input. So, it's positive and negative in that, yes, they both have made progress and have not moved at all, I think you can say. But honestly, all that group, most of them, I'd say 98% of those statements, you can't say are untrue, at the very least. So, all fair.
Yeah, it's actually kind of, it's a nice reminder of who we are. It's nice to see those types of responses at the beginning of the season and know there's no spring training for Phillies fans. We are on all the time. We don't need spring training. We don't need any type of break. We are hating our sports teams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We are the example for the entire world.
Well, and I'll say this too. And this, again, I've said this a number of different times. This is part of the issue with returning so much of the same roster. Nobody is looking at this 2026 season as its own thing, right? It's a continuation of 2025, which was a continuation of 2024. There is no newness to the 2026 roster. And so people are still, they're still understandably hung up on 2025. They're still hung up on 2024. So it's not like, you know, you've got these new, it's not like you're the Mets, where you've overturned a lot of your roster and you've got a bunch of new people in here and, you know, you're starting from scratch or more from scratch than running it back as the Phillies have done. That's where a lot of the fan base is. It's like, we've seen this before. It's just more of the same, same old S, you know, same old. There's, you know, and that's part of running it back. That's part of bringing this group back again. And yeah, that's what I mean. I think they feel that too sometimes. It's like, you know, I got this, I'm doing, here we go again, kind of a thing. And again, just three games, they'll get out of it. They'll play well. I do think this is going to be a team that wins the division, but you know, it's frustrating to watch because you want in your heart to believe the problems that you've seen in the playoffs and the offense and everything else, that they're going to go away. They're going to get better. It's just going to be the same thing. And you just hope they get hot at the right time. And we're going to be talking about this all season.
The thing about a small sample size is that, yes, it inflates some statistics that you can go like, okay, I mean, that was good, but obviously that's too high. Or you can take the opposite and say, like, all right, any bad things we saw here are not necessarily long term. But it does leave you with, you know, just three games to react to. And since these are the only three games the Phillies have played, it feels like we all have a very intimate relationship with these three baseball games. We all kind of know them inside and out. You know, we all know which plays are the ones we are using to blame them for losing. And, you know, ultimately that creates a lot of noise. But I'm hoping that, and this is what I was going to ask before, I'm hoping that the Nationals, who I know are a very, very weak opponent and have a very good chance of out-losing the Rockies at being the worst team in baseball this year, are a team that the Phillies have no reason, to bring back a phrase I started using last year, have no reason to lose any games to. But how do you view the Texas Rangers? Because I was kind of throwing them in there as like a, yeah, they're like a mid-team, totally beatable. But, you know, there were a couple of times this weekend where I was like, yeah, they don't look half bad. I don't know. Where are you putting them this year as far as like opponent wise as toughness?
Wait until you get them back at home in that giant cavernous airless stadium where home runs go to die. You know, they did some good stuff this weekend offensively, but you have to wonder how much it's going to stick since they play half their games at that stupid dome. I wasn't really that impressed with them. And I have a hard time thinking that Andrew McCutchen is going to be that productive the whole year. I would love it. It would be great to me personally to see him do well. But I just don't think he's going to continue to keep that up. So I agree with you, Justin. I think they're kind of a mid team. It's hard to put them at this stage in the top mid, excuse me, or lower mid, but they are definitely in the mid.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're somewhere between 10 and 13. You know, maybe they can be a top 10 team if everything goes right. Like if Jacob DeGrom comes back and he's really healthy and, you know, Mackenzie Gore pitches a whole season like he did in the first half last year. And Nathan Eovaldi's a solid pitcher. I think they're a wild card team. They're a potential wild card team. They could even be a top wild card team. So, yeah, I think they're decent. I think the Phillies, they should be on paper a better team than the Rangers. I think coming into the season, everybody had the Phillies higher on the power rankings than the Texas Rangers. And at home, you certainly think you want to win two out of three against that team. But I agree with you. I think they're talented. I don't think they're as talented as the Phillies, though. So,
yeah, Mackenzie Gore was a great get for them. And Nathan Eovaldi is sort of ageless in his effectiveness.
He really is.
He's been around forever.
Plenty of holes, you know. I think they're probably better than the Astros, but nowhere near as good as the Mariners. So, yeah, you're right. Wild card might be on the table.
And I'll mention one other thing before we wrap up, as we will try on this podcast to zoom out a little bit this year so that we're not so focused on the bubble of the Phillies. The Phillies, Trey Turner, Bryce Harper, Kyle Schwarber, not the only players to struggle here in the opening week of the season. Shohei Ohtani in his started off the season hitting 125 in his first three games. Aaron Judge has started off with two home runs, but a 154 batting average so far here this year. Bobby Witt Jr. off to a good start, 364 average. Cal Raleigh is in the throes of it. I think he was 0 for 8 with 8 strikeouts in his first two games. He has a 143 average to start the season. Jose Ramirez has a 133 average to start the season. And Bo Bichette had a really rocky weekend for the Mets. Booed lustily after striking out with runners on second and third in the seventh inning of a 2-2 game on Sunday against the Pirates. The Boobird's already coming for Bo Bichette in New York.
That's awesome.
Yep. He talked about it, actually. He said, he said something like, I'm amazed it took so long. I thought my at-bats were pretty terrible, too.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you're totally fine with this, aren't you? You're not upset. Yeah.
No,
you're definitely okay.
He's saying the right things, but it's early for that.
He's angry.
It's early for that. I mean, at least with Bryce Harper, Phillies fans have had like some time with this now. You know what I mean? But boy, that is not a long welcoming committee for Bo Bichette in New York. That's rough.
Could not be happier.
Let's finish up with some final thoughts. Justin, start us off.
One more spare little nice thing from the weekend. After just one walk on opening day and three in game two, Phillies drew 8 walks in game three. That'd be a nifty skill to hold on to when the line drives stop landing in people's gloves. So, you know, don't lose that instinct if that is, in fact, something you were doing on purpose. And additionally, the Phillies were just kind of waiting to lose in the eighth inning of game three. So again, I'm going back to the broadcast. Cole Hamels mentioned C.B. Buckner's horror show in Cincinnati, in which he had 8 challenges, 6 of them overturned. Hamels framed it like, hey, the umpires are so good most of the time. Sometimes you just have a bad day. Cole Hamels knows as well as I do, which indicates the scope of the issue, that someone who was directly impacted by it and someone hundreds of miles away from it. C.B. Buckner is quite famously a terrible umpire with a child's emotional regulation. I know there's nothing good about anything, but if ABS can purge guys like C.B. Buckner out of the league, or at the very least make them feel embarrassment at how bad they are, then it's working. No umpire should feel foolish for a couple of missed calls here and there. 6 of 8 is different. And I'll tell you what, won't be the last time he has a day like that.
And imagine the number of things he didn't get right that weren't challenged.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you only have a certain amount. It's not unlimited for sure. Liz, final thoughts?
This seems like a good time to say in the upcoming issue of the Baseball Research Journal, we have a piece I'm so excited about the effectiveness of MLB umpires as they get older. Now, in a number of sports, the officials, referees, tend to get better with age. I'm just going to leave that there and let you figure out why there's a whole paper on this if it's the same, because there wouldn't be a paper on it if MLB umpires got better with age. So that will be available in the Baseball Research Journal, hitting your mailboxes in the next month or so.
And if people want to get that, Liz, how do they go about it?
Well, they can go to saber.org/join. I believe that's what it is, /join, and join for, I believe it's not very much per year. I think it might just be like $80 or $90. And for that, you get access to 2 issues of the BRJ. You get access to the National Pastime, the journal that we do for the convention every year, where it's just full of articles about that region. This year, it's Cleveland. You also get access to all sorts of incredible research tools and archives of photos and stuff like that. So come join today, saber.org/join.
Good publicity there. And of course, for we mentioned it at the top of the broadcast, but for Justin's book, too, Summer of the Cheap Wieners, you want to go to brooklinebooks.com or anywhere else you can get books and order a copy of that. So we've got stuff to sell, people. Let's go. Let's break out the wallets. Let's do this.
Buy our stuff.
That's right. And I've got an
article. Buy Justin's book.
And I've got an article coming out for The Good Fight That's free. I don't know, whatever that means, but it'll be coming out here later in the afternoon on Monday, and it's a much shorter read. So if you've got 2 minutes of your day and you want to check out my comparison to the 2015 Phillies, you can check that out as well. All right, everybody, that's going to do it for this edition of Hittin' Season. I want to remind you all, if you're listening to this podcast, but you want to watch the roundtable edition of Hittin' Season, you can go over to our friends, our content partners at WHYY, their fantastic YouTube page, and you can subscribe to the WHYY YouTube channel, and you can watch every roundtable edition of Hittin' Season that we do. You can also follow us on Spotify. That would absolutely help us. I see we are making progress there on Spotify. So thank you, everybody who's followed the show there. Continue to do that. And if you listen to us on Apple Podcasts or Overcast or wherever it is you listen to podcasts, tell your family and friends about Hittin' Season as we are getting cranking on a Hey, we got 159 games left to go, so plenty of time to get in on the Phils action here in 2026. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time right here on Hittin' Season.